Hello and welcome to the First Right Podcast, your weekly dose of conservative news brought to you by Restoration of America. I'm your host, Hayden Ludwig, Research Director for Restoration News. Be sure to find our stuff at restoration-news.com. Joining us this week is Dr. John Lott, founder and president of the Crime Prevention Research Center, which studies the left's failed gun policies. John was also a senior advisor to President Trump on crime and gun policy. After authoring numerous important articles, books, and opinion pieces, it's fair to say there's no better expert to explain how the nation was plunged into this crime wave and how we can stop it. John, we're glad to have you on the show.
Well, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Well, it's clear to everybody that crime in America is completely out of control and has been since 2021 when Joe Biden took office. Even if you live in a heartland state like Wisconsin or Indiana, you effectively live in a border state. That's how wide open our southern border is. John, in your research, you connect this illegal immigration wave to the ongoing crime wave. Can you explain that to our listeners?
Well, I mean, I think there's strong evidence that legal immigrants commit crime at relatively low rates, lower than the general population. But illegal immigrants commit crime at relatively high rates, much higher than either the general population or legal immigrants. You know, it's not too surprising. I mean, I guess given that places like Venezuela are emptying out their jails for people, but you have lots of drug gangs and other crime groups that are coming into the United States, and you may have a small percentage of people committing crime, but it's true generally, a small percentage of criminals commit a huge percentage of the crime.
Yes, exactly. Now, most people are aware of the massive amount of illegal cartel drugs flooding across the border, including, of course, lethal fentanyl. Do you see a major impact on these drugs on violent crime in our cities?
Well, I mean, drug gangs are very closely related to violent crime generally. I mean, you look at how concentrated murders are in the United States. About 2% of the counties in the United States, that's 60 counties out of the 3,140 counties, account for 56% of the murders. And if you go and you look within those counties, you see even within those counties, the murders are extremely heavily concentrated. Almost two-thirds of the murders in those counties take place within 10 block areas. By contrast, 56% of the counties have zero murders. Another 15% of the counties have one murder. So about 70% of the counties in the United States have zero or one murder. And you can get an idea how incredibly concentrated murders are in the United States. And that's directly related to gang activity, drug gang activity. Drug gangs are also a major source of illegal guns in the country. It's not like a drug gang can go to the police and say, look, this other gang stole our drugs, can you help us get them back? They have to go and set up their own little militaries in order to protect that extremely valuable property that they have. And you know, you can look at a country like Mexico, for example. Mexico's had one gun store in the country since 1972. The most powerful that you've been able to legally buy in Mexico since 1972 is a 22 caliber short round bolt action rifle. It's not the type of gun that the drug gangs are using. Drug gangs in Mexico bring in weapons from around the world, just as they go and they bring in drugs from around the world. And the same thing is true in the United States. If I could go and click my fingers and cause all guns in the United States to disappear and all illegal drugs, how long do you think it would be before illegal drugs start coming back into the country? If you live in El Paso, 20 minutes. And how long would it be before they'd bring in the weapons that they would need in order to protect that valuable property that they have? They'd be presumably bringing them in at the same time. And so, you know, you're going to be about as successful in stopping criminals from getting guns as you have been successful in stopping them from getting illegal drugs, which isn't very successful.
So in other words, Mexico looks a lot like what the progressive left or the Democratic parties successful gun control policy would look like, virtually no firearms allowed for purchase by law-abiding citizens. And yet we all know Mexico is replete with automatic weapons that murder people, you know, by the score constantly because it's all black market stuff.
Look, I mean, since 1972, the murder rate in Mexico has more than doubled. In recent years, their murder rate has been as high as 6 times higher than the murder rate in the United States. You know, they have a very bad violent crime problem, and it's increased dramatically after they had the strict gun control laws. Just to embellish on your point a little bit there about who can own guns now, right now, it's less than 0.1% of the adult population in Mexico is legally licensed to own a gun. That hasn't stopped the fact that they have a murder rate, as I say, that's up to 6 times higher than the murder rate that we have here in the United States. And, you know, it's all they've done is ensure that the law-abiding citizens are disarmed relative to criminals. But, you know, it's true worldwide, that last point, and that is every place in the world that's banned either all guns or all handguns has seen an increase in murder rates. You'd think if the gun control advocates are correct that guns are the problem there, you should consistently all the time see drops. You at least think out of randomness once or twice you would see a drop in murder rates after gun bans have been in effect. And yet every single time it goes up. And there's a simple reason for that. And that is when you go and you, and it's true for gun control laws generally, not just bans, you have to be careful that when you pass gun control laws, they're not primarily going to disarm law-abiding citizens. In the case of gun bans, it's basically the most law-abiding citizens who turn in their guns. You may take a few guns away from the criminals, but you're primarily disarming law-abiding citizens. And to the extent that that's true, you actually make it easier for the criminals to go and commit crime.
Right, exactly. This is what the data shows, right? But, you know, the other side of this is what the media reports. Let's talk about the phrase gun violence. We've heard it, you know, countless times echoed throughout U.S. quote-unquote mainstream media here. You'll notice it seems every time somebody is murdered with a firearm, it's called gun violence. But, you know, the same isn't true if somebody's run over by a drunk driver. They don't call that car violence. Why is this spin? Where does this spin come from? Help us understand that.
Well, you know, it's a kind of a deep philosophical question why Democrats and liberals support gun control so much. And I suppose the reason why that I give is it's more basic. Who do you trust to make decisions? So I'll give you a simple example. You look at something like Obamacare. The only things that people really can choose from now are the size of the deductible. What's covered is mandated by the federal government. If you're a 65-year-old woman, you're still covered for childbirth, even though obviously that's not something that you would be concerned about. But yet you're still paying the premiums. Premiums increased dramatically when Obamacare went into effect and have stayed high. And the reason is because people get covered for all sorts of things that they really don't need in any way. But the basic point there is that they don't trust people to be able to make decisions about what should be covered in terms of insurance and what shouldn't be covered. And the same thing is, if you don't trust people to decide what their health insurance should cover, are you going to trust them with a weapon? I mean, in some sense, whether you trust somebody with a weapon or not is kind of the ultimate decision there, whether you trust individuals to make decisions or you just trust government. And we're in a situation right now where there are a lot of people who think that they're much smarter than other people and that they're better at making decisions for people than people are themselves. You know, I've been in academia most of my life, and you know, academics are replete with people who think that they're the smartest people around and that they're the ones who should be making decisions for everybody else. And that's basically what we see with regard to gun issues and other issues too.
Yeah, that is fascinating. I want to draw attention to a stunning statistic I found in some of your work that 94% of mass public shootings occurred in a quote-unquote gun-free zone in the United States. I want to tee off that to ask you a question. You know, one of the issues that the Supreme Court and Congress have both ruled in or legislated on is a gun registry. You are not allowed to have a gun registry in the United States. And yet we know recently in California, the left and its activist allies are using these merchant codes. It's a banking system to basically identify anybody who makes a firearm or ammunition purchase. This is basically a backdoor way or loophole into creating a California gun registry. John, do you see Democrats in Congress elsewhere pushing for a national gun registry, either through loophole or straight up legislation, maybe defying the Supreme Court? It seems we're headed that way.
Well, there's federal law that prevents the federal government from having a national gun registry. Individual states can put together their own registry. In fact, we already have a national registry under the Biden administration. The Biden administration has collected literally almost a billion transactions that they computerized. They don't have kind of many of the most recent transactions that have occurred, but that's the reason why they have also gone to places like Bank of America to get the type of credit card information on gun purchases, or have gone to UPS or FedEx to find whether people have shipped firearms to try to fill in those blanks. It's the reason why the Democrats push for things like so-called universal background checks on the private transfers of guns, so that they have a complete registry there. Now, the Biden administration says, well, even though they've computerized all these transactions and created this registry, they say they're not actually breaking federal law because they haven't actually used the computerized database for anything. And until they actually use it for something, they're not violating the law. You know, one can go and debate that, I guess. But the point is that they put this registry together. And, you know, they claim that the reason why you need a gun registry is to help solve crime. And, you know, in theory, if a gun is left at a crime scene and it's registered to the criminal, then you can go and trace the gun back to the criminal and solve the crime. The problem is that just doesn't happen. First of all, crime guns are very rarely left at the crime scene. When they are left at the crime scene, it's usually because the criminal's been either killed or seriously wounded, so you've caught them anyway. In the few times beyond that they're left, they're not registered. And the once or twice that they are registered, they're not registered to the person who committed the crime. And you can look at we have registration and licensing in places like Hawaii. We've had it in Chicago. We've had it in Washington, D.C. We've had it in New York. We've had it in Maryland. We've had it in Pennsylvania. You can look at the history in those places, and they just can't point to crimes that they've been able to solve. And that's true in other countries like Canada, for example. In Hawaii, they've had registration licensing since 1960. It seems kind of an ideal experiment for having. It's an island nation there, or island state. So they have some protections, making it more difficult for people to take guns in or out of the place. And yet, Honolulu police chief in testimony a while ago said that he could not identify one single crime that they had been able to solve as a result of licensing and registration. But he Wow. estimated that it took about 50,000 hours worth of police time each year just to run the registration licensing program in Honolulu. That's 50,000 hours worth of police time that could go to things that we know work for policing. You know, if they could point to 1,000 crimes that they've been able to solve, or 100 crimes, or 12, or 3, then there would at least be some trade-off that was there. But if you can't point to any crimes that you've been able to solve, and you're taking 50,000 hours worth of police time each year from things that we know work into putting into something which doesn't solve any crimes, you know, that's a real cost. There's a lot of crimes we could have solved. You've had places like New York and Maryland, which for 15 years each had a registry program and ballistic fingerprinting. And they spent tens of millions of dollars New York probably spent something around $45 million on their program. And yet they couldn't point to one single crime that they've been able to solve. Even strong gun control places like New York and Maryland eventually got rid of these very costly programs because they couldn't point to any crimes that they had been able to solve. And they were spending many, many millions, tens of millions of dollars on these programs, tens of millions of dollars that could have gone to policing that we know work, or could have gone to education or reducing taxes or something else. And so even those strong gun control advocates said, you know, this isn't working. You know, the irony is that the gun control advocates out there were saying, oh, you need more time to get a case. 15 years isn't long enough to be able to show whether or not this type of registration licensing would work.
15 years. I'd say it's unbelievable, but of course, what you're really saying is this fight has been for decades. One side presents a mountain of clear evidence, and the other side largely relies on media, what can we call it, misinformation and emotionalism, tugging on the heartstrings of people because it sounds better than the data to many of the people they're trying to convince here. You know, looking forward, especially with the next November election coming up, John, one thing that we've noticed at Restoration of America, of course, is that conservatives have not been particularly good about predicting the left's next attack on the Second Amendment. We've too often been reactive when we need to be proactive. So heading into November, what do you see as the next front in this gun control fight that we need to be aware of?
Well, I mean, we have huge changes that are occurring right now. The Biden administration, under its so-called zero tolerance policy, has put literally thousands of gun dealers out of business. Basically, they're looking for any paperwork mistake, no matter how trivial, no matter how inconsequential. You make one paperwork mistake over the last 16, 17 years or more, and they'll put you out of business. There's one case that I saw a little while ago, a federal firearms dealer in Texas. 16 and 17 years ago, he had made one mistake on two different forms where he had transposed two letters. The Obama administration, which was hardly sympathetic to gun ownership, had looked at it, said these are trivial mistakes, had closed the books on them. The guy has made no other paperwork mistakes, no matter how trivial, over the intervening 16 years. But the Biden administration looked at it, couldn't find any mistakes, but went back and then reopened those two tiny trivial mistakes that were made and used those reopened cases to take away the license for that firearms dealer. And they've done that literally for thousands of places. They've also now going after large dealers. About 5% of the dealers in the country sell about 90% of the guns. You have Cabela and Shields and, you could go through the list of Bass Pro Shop and what have you. And what they've done now is say, if you have sold over a three-year period 25 guns or more that are traced, and so just because a gun's traced doesn't mean it was used in a crime, okay? But traced by the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, then they'll impose dramatically higher reporting standards and paperwork requirements on these dealers. And so, you know, maybe you sold 10, 12,000 guns a year. 25 is a trivial number. I mean, if you, and again, not all those, or maybe even most, may not even have been involved in a crime. It's one thing to say you sold 25 guns and 25 guns were traced. At least you'd kind of want to know what they were traced for in that case, but at least that might be something to go and look at. But if I sell, 10 or 12 or 15,000 guns over the course of a year, they say, well, 25 guns that were sold over a three-year period of time were traced, just doing, it makes no sense. It seems like what you would want to look at is the percentage of the guns that are sold, but they purposely set up this rule just to impose costs on the biggest dealers to try to make it so it's not profitable for them to go and sell firearms. And, right. And they do other things, like they put out their names in order to try to publicly shame them and try to get them to stop selling guns.
Yeah. Shifting back to the border for a minute, I want to talk about sanctuary cities and get your take on this. You know, I think one of the most outrageous part of Biden's open border policies is that he's ordered federal agents to assist illegal aliens coming over the border, you know, exactly the opposite of what their job is, to protect the border. And it was one of these illegal aliens, Jose Ibarra, who just last month murdered a young woman at the University of Georgia, Laken Riley, in Athens, Georgia. Now, even though Georgia has a law against sanctuary cities, it's very clear that Athens is effectively a sanctuary city, which definitionally means, of course, that local law enforcement is prohibited from working with federal border and ICE authorities, immigration authorities. One of the interesting things to come out of that, you probably saw this, though, was how the mayor of Athens and the media both tried to downplay the sanctuary city status, which is quite the reverse from just a few years ago when we saw the left try to expand the number of sanctuary cities across the country. John, do you see this maybe as a turning point in this fight to restore law and order and to fight sanctuary cities in the country?
I don't know how much of a turning point. I think a lot's going to depend upon the election that comes up in November, because I don't think it's had any fundamental impact on the Biden administration. You know, and you've had Biden going and doing all sorts of things, like cutting the barriers down that Texas has tried to put up. So he's not only, he's used federal agents to make it easier for people to get across in areas where they're not even supposed to be. I mean, the drug cartels that are human trafficking these people try to put them in different places along the border so as to spread out the border patrol to make it even more difficult for them to do their job, because they have to go and essentially handle, because they're basically serving as shuttle agents, I guess, for these illegals, rather than having them come through the ports of entry that they're supposed to be coming through, you know, even under the Biden administration. And, you know, whether it's going to make a difference, I think it's going to depend upon the election. Biden can go and stop this today if he wanted to by putting in policies that were in effect under the Trump administration, things like Remain in Mexico. Biden not only rescinded that, but then he had to go to court in order to go and get that to end. You know, there's all sorts of things that are there. And, but, you know, the thing is, we have no clue how many illegals are coming into the country. There's three categories of them. There's those that voluntarily turn themselves in. There's those that we see but don't catch. And then there's those that we don't even see. And the problem is that, you know, maybe 90+% of the border agents aren't guarding the border. They're going and handling this massive flow of people that are coming in. And so there's large stretches of the border, which really we have nobody watching. And so the ones that we probably should be most concerned about are the ones that are coming in that don't want to be caught. Either we see, but we don't catch, or we never even see come in. So, you know, we have no clue how large those are that we don't see. You know, the drug cartels appear to have a pretty good idea what parts of the border are not even being watched at all. And so hardened criminals and other things, that the people that we should be most concerned about, are probably ones that we never even see in large part.
Of course, it's not just, you know, the president too, it's other Democrats like Arizona Governor Katie Hobbs. I mean, just the other day, she vetoed a Republican passed bill from the legislature, which would have made it a crime, a deportable crime, that is, for anybody to non-citizen to enter Arizona in any other place except for its 22 ports of entry. And to your point, that means that local law enforcement won't be allowed to enforce the border. It's going to be more men and women who have to serve on the massive border separating Arizona and Mexico. There's no reason you would do this except for political reasons. You're trying to protect these illegal aliens. Your thoughts?
Right. Well, I'm not sure that it was a deportable crime so much as it was a state crime. States can't deport people themselves. That's going to be something that's going to be up to the federal government. But what the state can do is it can go and define what a state crime is. And that's pretty much what Texas has done. And so the Republican legislature, they still have bare control of both the House and the Senate there in Arizona. Passed a bill to try to do something similar to what had happened in Texas there. So, but you know, Katie Hobbs is doing nothing there to try to protect the border. You have a similar thing in New Mexico that's occurring in California. So even though Texas now has reduced the flow of illegal immigrants coming in, they're just moving to the other states, which are all run by Democrats, to go and have people come in.
Well, equal parts fascinating and terrifying. Where can listeners find your work?
Well, they go to our website at crimeresearch.org, crimeresearch.org. We cover a wide range of crime issues, from everything from policing to gun control to vote fraud issues.
Dr. John Lott, thank you for joining the show and for all you do.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
First Right, a new kind of news summary without the liberal slant. Every morning, in your inbox, always free. Subscribe by texting First Right to 30161. That's First Right. All caps, one word, to 30161.